This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You are listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Mukhtar, Kusu Chuang and Noel Lim. It's 7:35 in the morning, Monday the 23rd of August. We now turn to the issue of COVID-19 booster jabs as we see countries begin to consider whether additional shots are needed, especially given the rapid spread of the Delta variant. So this is despite the World Health Organization, or WHO, calling for a moratorium on third jabs at least until the end of next month in order to favor those who are still unvaccinated. And there are a lot of people in this world who are yet to be vaccinated.
Yeah, so some countries like Indonesia and the United Arab Emirates have already rolled out their booster shot programs. Of course, due to the more contagious Delta variant, even Indonesia has started giving a third shot of the vaccine to healthcare workers. And we know, following the deaths of hundreds of frontliners over the past 2 months, many of whom had already been fully vaccinated. Okay, and of course, the US, the UK and France are also slated to administer booster jabs in September.
So, Malaysia, we are also mulling the option of booster jabs, although the health ministry hasn't made any firm decision yet. The question we're asking today is, are booster jabs necessary? And if so, when should we roll them out and who should be prioritized first? So, to shed more light on this, we have on the line Dr. Dale Fisher, Senior Consultant and Professor in Infectious Diseases at National University Hospital of Singapore. Good morning, Dale. Thanks so much for speaking with us this morning. So, can we ask if there has been any conclusive research that booster jabs are necessary? What does the data and science tell us?
It's a good question. This is there conclusive evidence? Because I think that's what the whole conversation's about. And there's not conclusive evidence. There's a lot of sort of anecdotal evidence, I guess, that you can pull together. Lots of antibody studies, which often show that the immunity is waning, but it's more than antibodies. It's also T cells and other parts of the immune system, and in fact even B cells. Sometimes when they are re-challenged, if you like, by the virus going to someone that's been vaccinated, you often see a big jump suddenly. So antibodies aren't a very good indicator, but we don't have a very good indicator apart from the clinical response. So then the clinical response, some countries are noticing that when you stop all the restrictions, when your vaccination rates are perhaps above 60% of the total population, then actually they see lots of cases. And I say that's not at all surprising and shouldn't be part of the conversation, because we know the vaccines don't stop transmission. They only stop severe disease. So then the question is, are we seeing more severe disease in people that have been vaccinated? And the answer to that is not really. Israel says they're seeing some, but it's not sort of public information. The US is saying that they're seeing more mild and sometimes moderate disease after 8 months of vaccination. So I think everyone is just working in anticipation of this happening. And as you say, the WHO is saying, please don't go giving people third jabs when so much of the world hasn't even had one.
Yeah, so WHO has come out clearly to say that there is no need for booster jabs right now. And it seems to me that argument is driven by the need to prioritize global vaccine equality. Do you agree with this view?
I do, but I also understand why other countries are looking at the situation. We've shown that governments obviously give priority to their own populations rather than the global population. That said, though, I think it's still premature. I think we should really be looking at it, and countries still focusing on what is generally a large proportion of the population still not vaccinated. And in fact, the people dying and getting severe disease, even in those countries, the vast, vast majority are those unvaccinated. So it's the wrong solution when you've got people dying that are unvaccinated to give the vaccinated another dose. That's not obviously the right response.
Yeah, Dr. Fisher, in terms of what you talked about antibodies, right? I guess in the rush to vaccinate the population, there's been a plethora of different manufacturers in the fray. Do you have a sense or do you have a view on which vaccine types have been more efficacious in terms of dealing with the virus? I mean, the sense is that the Chinese vaccines have not been as efficacious as the Pfizer version.
Well, that's certainly the real world impression, is that the mRNA vaccines have been good, but by the same token, I think everything works, especially against severe disease. But you raise another good point in that as we're looking at what vaccines might be having a reduced effect after 8 months. The first question is, well, which vaccines? Are they all having waning immunity? And then you can throw in which combinations of vaccines. So we really need to do a good job of putting together this data. It's obviously not a clinical trial, which would have been a lot cleaner because everyone just started vaccinating madly. But we might find that some vaccines last longer than others. We might find that if you've had that sort of what we call a heterologous booster, so you've had one vaccine and then the second dose has been a different vaccine, some are arguing that might show a more prolonged effect. So it's really, it's quite messy, actually.
It does sound really messy, Dale. And I guess we're just operating in this environment where a lot of new information is coming through and we're trying to make sense of all that new information while at the same time also setting up policy. So it's a kind of a difficult conundrum to be in for everyone. Can I ask your opinion on reopening strategies then? Because we're seeing in Malaysia, our reopening strategy is heavily based on whether one has been fully vaccinated or not. So taking into account what we're seeing with the rise of breakthrough infections, should our COVID response strategy also encompass other factors and not just vaccination rates?
Vaccination rate is easily the most important, but you mentioned the word breakthrough infections, and this is really a misnomer. Breakthrough suggests that it's unexpected, it's a surprise, it suggests a problem, but we've known ever since the end of last year, really, that as opposed to something like measles, which prevents 97% of spread, this one, these vaccines on this virus is more like 50% or 60%. So we know that people that are vaccinated can get infection, can pass the infection on even through an asymptomatic phase. So once you know that, then the whole conversation around herd immunity is gone. There is no, if herd immunity is defined as you can be protected without even having the vaccine because everybody around you has had the vaccine. That would be true in measles, but you don't get that shielding effect with this. So you only are protected if you have had the vaccine. Of course, those around you will decrease transmission a little bit, but if you get it, you're vulnerable. It's as simple as that. So the reopening strategy we've learned already that you have to have a very high rate, and Singapore is going into this with about 78% of the total population has had two jabs, and about 83% have had one jab. So we're currently ahead of Europe and all those other countries by about 10%. And in Singapore, we're opening up very cautiously, step by step. We know that throwing the doors open, we obviously lose control of case numbers and just hope that not too many people get sick at the same time. But ours will be a much more cautious approach. And the reasons to go slow are because we want to see how many people do get severely unwell. What is the impact on the health system? So I think that I agree with that approach. I think how you exit this pandemic is important, and it's critical around getting your vaccine numbers up, and then a gradual easing of all those restrictions that we're all sick of.
So very quickly, Dale, when do you think we can really return to normal life where we no longer have to wear a mask?
Well, I think masks, the things they'll peel off are going to be the interventions that have the greatest social and economic impact. So I think travel will come back sooner. Group meetings, as I say, travel without quarantine. Malaysia will be desperate to get tourism happening again. So I think we're going to see these types of things eased before masks, because actually masks don't have a big bearing. And why not undo everything at once? Well, it's because we just want to gauge the impact of these. So let's take off the things that impact on us, and masks really don't impact on us. And if that keeps infections down a bit, then that's a good thing at this stage. When will they come off? Maybe Christmas time. I don't know. That's a guess. Don't quote me. Don't tell anyone.
Dale, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Dr. Dale Fisher, Professor of Infectious Diseases from the National University of Singapore, talking to us about COVID-19 booster jabs and giving a guess as to when we may be able to take off our masks for good. But I think he makes a good point. As long as I think they do provide some form of protection for the short term, they're not too invasive. You know, I think we can keep them on if it means that in the longer term, we'll have a better chance of, going back to a normal life. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.